Thank you, and it's nice to see some familiar faces. So again, I'm back and teaching the e-marketing course, so I'll be here for another week in Hong Kong. The title actually comes from my co-authors. There are a couple other people that I've been working on this paper with, Shibo Lee and also Bao Hong Sun. Shibo is graduated from Carnegie Mellon and is now at Indiana University, and Bao Hong is also a faculty member at Carnegie Mellon. The paper is not purely empirical. There is sort of a theoretical component to it. What has happened over the last couple of years is I've been working with a group of students in what we call the analytic marketing strategy. The goal is to try to bring quantitative techniques into marketing problems. Financial services are a great source of data and information, and as a result, they have many marketing problems that they would like to focus on using their data. This particular problem has actually gone through a couple of iterations. There's one financial service, an integrated bank that we've been working with, and then this last year we also have worked with our own school with the advancement services. Again, I'll give you a little background in the context of customer relationship management, and then I'll talk some about the model. I'll try not to go into the details about the model. There's a technical report, if you're interested, that I can give you. And then I'll just give you a sense of what some of the findings have been from this analysis. And again, I'll try to take around 40 minutes or so and leave some time for questions as well. And please feel free to interrupt me if you do have any questions. I'm happy to take them as we go along. There's no need to wait till the end. The problem is to think about how the marketing actions that we take today are going to impact consumer behavior. Now, it's clear that we could take immediate action. So since I'm going to put this in the context of a bank or financial services, it makes sense for me just to use the phrase credit card company or bank. It's not as narrow as that, but that's the application that I've been thinking about. So a credit card company may be interested in going out and getting another client. So how would they do that? Well, they might be using direct mail. They might be using personal selling. They might be using takeaways and bind-ins. So these are all different ways that they might try to recruit new accounts to them right now. Companies have gotten very good at this form of marketing. However, the actions that you take today are also going to have a consequence in the future. So if I get a customer today, that customer is also going to have opportunities. I'm going to have opportunities with that customer a year from now, or 5 years from now, or in the long term, maybe 10 years from now. If you think about the way that most customers evolve, there's a pattern. Usually we don't start out financially able, but then as time progresses, we build more wealth, and with that greater wealth, the need for more financial services. So right now, you might imagine a student. The student might have need for a checking account. Then they'll open up a credit card account. Later, after they graduate, they'll need an automobile loan. And then maybe a couple of years after that, they'll need a mortgage. So there's a process that we could imagine that people are maturing through. It might be very difficult or competitive to get that person once they've become financially successful, and I'm competing with many other banks for their mortgage business. However, if I back up, I might be able to attract this person early on, and it might be easy. What I would like to do is think about how much easier is it in the long term to sell extra services, cross-sell services to this customer, if I recruit them early on right now. So the goal is to better allocate marketing expenditures to yield the best long-term returns. Potential uses are to identify clients that might become profitable in the future but are currently not targeted, or to invest even greater resources in accounts because we believe that there's a higher return for us. There's also another component of this, which is to try to develop a metric for banks as they evaluate what's the profitability of an account. The problem is motivated by a bank that we've been working with. The bank has a large repertoire of customers. So let's say there are 1 million customers that they have currently. What they're focused on right now is thinking about upselling or cross-selling their services. So for the last few years in the United States, home equity lines have been very profitable. Given that this is the most profitable service, it's not the only service that the bank offers. They also offer credit cards, and they also offer maybe certificates of deposits. What they do is they go through, and they've got their 1 million customers, and they sort them out, and they find, well, what are the best customers to offer credit cards to? And what are the best customers to offer equity lines to? And what are the best customers to offer other loans to? Unfortunately, what happens is many of the customers that are good for credit cards are also the ones that are also going to be good prospects for home equity lines. So what we'd like to do is, instead of being naive and thinking about just this return or this campaign, let's try to be smarter and let's try to be forward-looking and thinking about the different types of campaigns that we are going to run and understand that consumers are going to evolve as well. And given this evolution, how can we segment and divide up our customers in thinking about what's the best campaign that we would offer them? The current response rate is typically about 5%, usually lower than 5% on an individual campaign. So our goal is to, again, think about this in a long-term perspective and see if we can increase the response rate that we would get and just not think about a short-term campaign, but a long-term campaign. I'm not sure of the background. I know I saw many have background in financial services, so you might know more about credit card services than I do. But for those that don't, I'll try to back up and just give a brief introduction. So this might look familiar when I start talking about e-marketing. It's natural to put this in the context of e-marketing, since we're really thinking about a relationship that we have with our customers. So how do we manage this relationship? And this puts us directly into CRM or customer relationship management. Customer relationship management is the notion that we're going to manage each of our customers. We're going to try to create value for them, and as we create value for them, that's going to create profit and opportunities for our company. So at the core of CRM is this idea of co-production. Co-production of value for me as a company and production of value for you as the customer. CRM is starting to evolve and it's starting to mature. Unfortunately, right now, there's still quite a bit of variability in what people think of as CRM. The one problem that we have with CRM is that people tend to think about it more in terms of the software that's sold. What I think is helpful is to think about it more in terms of a marketing strategy. The reason that I put this slide up about CRM is that this cross-selling campaign is a very natural extension. What we're trying to do is anticipate how a customer is going to grow and mature. And as a bank, we want to anticipate that customer's need. In fact, we might even want to precipitate the need we might want to educate our customers. So maybe our customer is not using a particular financial service with us right now. But we see that given the amount of assets that they have, maybe we should try to encourage them to move into some type of brokerage account. So how should we educate our customers? And again, this is going back to, it's really not just passively waiting for our customers to come to us. It's thinking about what our customers are going to need and how can we educate our customers as we anticipate their needs. The problems that we've run into in CRM is that there's a large data requirement that's necessary. The data for the bank example, even though we have a large number of customers, millions of customers, unfortunately most banks don't keep long transaction histories. And when I say long transaction histories, I'm really thinking about every transaction going back to the inception of the account. Typically what happens is these things get archived. So many of the banks that I've seen, they'll just keep maybe the last couple of years of transactions, which might seem like a lot of information. However, for this particular application, it'd be much better to know the entire history of the customer. The other example that I'm using for the university for advancement. So after you graduate from the university comes back and contacts you from the philanthropic perspective, where they would like you to donate to the university. So again, this is actually a relationship that you have with the university. So you could think of yourself as the customer of the university, and what the university would like to do is perhaps invite you to alumni activities, lectures and seminars and trips and continuing education. So in the university data set that I've been working with, what's nice is that we actually have a very long span. We have some graduates from 40 or 50 years ago, and we do have a very long span of information about that customer. So again, to do this effectively, we're going to need a lot of information. We're going to need to coordinate the activities across a broad spectrum. There are challenges. Being in a university, we look for problems that are difficult to solve. One of the things that makes this problem particularly challenging is it's combining many different areas. We've got large data sets, we've got customer relationships, marketing relationships that we're trying to develop, and then we also have mathematical and statistical problems. How do we think about what the response is going to be for our customers? So just to again, give you a brief introduction for what my goal here is. We'd like to measure lifetime value. So I'm interested in thinking about what is the value of a particular customer to the bank. I can naively just think about the credit card by itself. But if I did that, I would realize that I'm missing out on the other services that potentially I could sell that customer later on in their life. So maybe 2 years out is when they're going to be interested in taking out a car loan from me. Maybe 3 years out, there's going to be some type of insurance. Or 4 years out, they're going to think about some type of brokerage service. So there's that large cost up front, which is that acquisition cost, and then there's that base profit. But what we're interested in is that increased purchases and that cross-selling opportunities that we have for the other products that are in our portfolio. So this is an idealized example. It doesn't necessarily correspond with the bank, except to say that, yes, we expect that there are going to be opportunities. There are some things that are under the control of the bank, and there are other things that are not under control of the bank. The bank at any time can talk to you and ask you, would you like to enroll or take out a credit card or some other service? However, the bank doesn't control your income. It doesn't control your creditworthiness. It doesn't control whether you're married or you're divorced or you've got children or whether you're going back to school. Those are all things that are outside of its control. But if you think about it, all those factors play an important role in the financial health of our customers. So what we'd like to do is try to think about developing a segmentation scheme about how customers are going to change through time and understand that some of the changes that customers are going to go through are outside of our control. However, they follow a path. They start out young, and as they mature, they tend to also increase in assets. Not always, but the typical path is that as you mature, you're going to accrue greater financial assets, some more so than others. So if I have someone that's on a professional track, in 10 or 20 years from now, I can expect that they're going to amass greater assets than someone that's in a trade right now. So our problem is to try to think about two tracks. How is the customer maturing? And then at those times as the customer maturing and they become more receptive to certain types of financial services, how can I intervene? Or what's the best strategy for reaching those customers? There really are many different ways that the bank can contact you. It's not simply just sending you a direct mail brochure. There are personal selling and direct selling that the bank is going to do, but obviously that's very expensive. And they have to be careful not to do too much. Otherwise, they'll turn you off to working with the bank, and they'll start losing your trust. So the motivation for this particular problem and model is that what we'd like to do is acquire customers early in their life cycles when they're more receptive and less costly to acquire. Now, we have to be careful because if we acquire them too early, there's a great chance that they might move away. So banking is still driven by the location of branches. So if I have a customer that moves far away from a branch, then it's likely that they might discontinue their account. So I've got to think about the mobility of the customers. So I don't want to be naive and think that if I acquire a customer when they're 12, that they're going to also be a customer when they're 62. Many things that could happen during that. But again, our goal is to try to think about a consumer who has some type of deposit account with us right now and to try to figure out how much more likely that customer is to take out loans. So we'd like to strategically target the consumers who appear to be underutilized to increase their long-term value. The problem is that what we're going to do is effectively take dollars away from units within the organization that are interested in return right now. So I've got the home equity line product, and let's imagine that the home equity line product is the most valuable, profitable service that we're offering right now. It might seem the best thing to do is just try to sell everyone home equity lines. The problem is that some people may not be receptive to the home equity lines. The other problem is that if I sell them a home equity line, it might make them less receptive to some of the other products that I might want to sell them later on. So I've got to think about the sequence of products and how, if I open up one account, how does that change the chance that I'll open up another account? There was one bank that I worked with that they had tried to migrate consumers to different types of accounts. So banks are really good at using technology. So initially you just had tellers, then the bank started opening up telephone banking centers, and then they opened up automatic teller machines, ATMs, and more recently they've moved to electronic banking. I think one of the motivations for the bank was thinking that these other services are going to be cheaper, And what we really would like to do is get rid of some of the costly tellers that we have, and let's try to move them off to ATM machines. Unfortunately, what's happened is that all these channels have stayed around, and it's actually becoming more and more costly to service customers. So what we would like to try to do is think about the costs that are involved in servicing these customer accounts, and how do we think about the receptiveness that the customers have to each of these different channels. So just like some customers prefer to use ATM machines or electronic transfers, other customers might be very receptive to emails or less receptive to direct mails. So can we also think about the receptiveness to customers to different types of messages? So this is a very simplified example of what we're trying to do. Let's suppose we've got the first period and the second period, and we're just thinking about a customer here. So let's say that they start out in this less affluent state, and then they're going to move up to this more affluent state. So this is today, right now, so this is 2006, and then maybe this is 5 years from now. It could be 1 year from now. Again, this is going to be repeated in many different iterations. So I've got my customer that's in this less affluent state, and I know that there's some probability that they're going to move up to that more affluent state. When they go to the more affluent state, they're going to become very profitable for me. Unfortunately, I can't do much as a bank to move them from the low affluency to the high affluency state. That's outside of my control. I might have some ability to educate them and maybe increase the return on assets, but my thinking is that some of the movement in the state is outside of my control. But that doesn't mean that I shouldn't be concerned about it. Because at this point, this person, even though they're low profit, they're also going to be much more receptive to the bank. When they move over to the high affluency status, it's going to be a very competitive market. Every bank is going to be looking at that customer as being very attractive and very profitable. If I can build up my relationship with the customer in the first period, I can acquire them at a low cost, and then in the second period, I've increased the likelihood they'll stay with me, and because of my investment in that loyalty, I will now be able to enjoy that greater reward. The trick is that we've got to figure out what's the chance that they're going to move up to that higher affluency state, that higher profit state. The other question is, how much more receptive are they going to be to our offer? So if they are just the same amount of receptiveness in the second period as in the first period, then this isn't really going to work. What's going to make this work is that I have the student who's just graduating, I give them a credit card, and because I was the only one that gave them the credit card, that 5 years from now, as I start building up my services with them, they're going to become more loyal to me. And that's going to make them a more profitable type of account that I would service. So let me give you an example of the kinds of segmentations that we're thinking about and how customers can move across these different states. This is an analysis where we take U.S. customers and we put them into 42 different segments. So these segments are defined by Equifax, which is a large credit reporting agency. The profiles are largely ordered in terms of affluency. So one is going to be the most affluent and 42 is going to be the least affluent. So I guess it's better to be higher, in this case, a lower number. But again, I don't mean to imply that you're a bad person if you're in the category 42. And I don't mean to imply that you're a good person if you're in segment one. From the bank's perspective, the profitability for some of these lower accounts can actually be greater than the higher accounts, because the lower accounts are more loyal, and the segments over here are less competitive. And the other thing that's interesting is sometimes they generate more fees. So the high income might only have a small percent of their assets that are with this particular bank. All right, so the ones that correspond with the most profitable segments of the bank are the top six, the wealth market, the affluent retired, the comfortably retired, the high asset pre-retired investors, the high asset suburban boomers, and the high asset ex-urban boomers. Just think about the affluent retired. How do you become an affluent retired person? Well, generally you start out as a high asset working person, and then gradually as you get older, you retire, right? It's not something the bank has any control over. It's just something that's going to happen naturally. How do you become a high asset suburban boomer? Well, they might start out as an urban boomer builder, and then they start moving up to high asset. You start out with maybe moderate assets without children, and then high assets with children, and then gradually you move into the retired category. So how do you become a high asset suburban boomer? If we look at the transitions, what we find out is that the probability that you're going to be a high asset suburban boomer next year is, if you were previously a high asset suburban boomer, you've got a 70% chance. And this is actually pretty common. Most of the categories are fairly sticky, that you have a fairly high probability of staying where you are. But what's interesting is that there's some chance that I'm going to move into this high asset suburban boomer category. So what are some of the other places that people are moving from? The wealth market, the high asset affluent climbers, the high asset pre-retired investors, the affluent retired, the affluent renters. So these are some of the places that people will move into. So if we can understand these transition patterns, we can think about what's the chance that if I take any given category, so in this particular case, you could pick out metro downscale, and you could ask the question, what's the chance that this metro downscale customer is going to move up into one of these categories that presumably are going to be more profitable for us, maybe 5 or 10 years out? So we can develop a model, a statistical model, that thinks about that transition pattern. And that's really at the heart of what we're trying to do. Yes?
How do we come up with this top 50?
So we look at the way that consumers are changing. So these probabilities are based upon how consumers have changed from over the last couple of years. So I look at what's the state that they were in last year and what's the state that they're in this year.
So you categorize them because you know how much they have in the bank. Is that right?
In this case, it's information that's based from their credit report, which is not just information in my bank, it's information about all the banks. But this is going to be a problem because typically a bank is only going to know financial information about what they're doing within the bank. There are also a lot of restrictions, which from a research standpoint is difficult to deal with because we've got good reporting, credit reporting scores, but the problem is that legally we can't use those credit reporting scores without the person's authorization or without disclosing it, and the banks don't like to do that. Yes?
How about the population size of each segment? Because there may be a segment which is very low in the ranking.
Right.
It could be 70% of the total population. So when you multiply the probability, very low probability, but
right,
a very large percentage of the population, then you might end up with a total revenue which is better off.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yes. So in this case, the segments are fairly well dispersed. You're right that we do want to think about how many consumers are going to be in each of these segments as well. All right. So what I'd like to do is sort of outline the model that we're going to do. as I said before, I won't get into a lot of the specifics about the mechanics of the model, but I'll try to give you a flavor for how this is going to work and what I think are some of the interesting findings. So first, we've got to model the financial state, and we've got to realize that this financial state is going to be very important to saying whether someone's going to be receptive or not to a particular offer. So before I can offer someone a home equity line, they have to have some amount of equity in their home. And then on top of that, they also have to have a need for this equity. So why do you want to borrow this? So some people that are in certain states, like if their children are going away to college or if they're thinking about redecorating, these might be some of the reasons why they might want to tap into their equity. So we've got that at that latent financial state. This might be partially observable, but unfortunately it's not totally observable. So I'm trying to work with the information that the bank has. So from the information the bank has, we're trying to figure out what's the financial state they're in at the same time as thinking about how are they responding to the offers that we're making them. What can the bank do to impact the decisions or the actions that my customers are taking? They can launch these campaigns, and the campaigns can go according to email. They could be launched according to general advertising, personal selling, ATMs. They have campaigns that can be launched through the ATM machine when you come to the bank. So I realized that the cross-selling campaign could have some multiple impact. One is just to promote a service. Another is to try to educate my customers. They might say, oh, I didn't realize that you also sold financial services like insurance or brokerage services. Or it could just be trying to raise awareness of these services as well. So the educational perspective is one that as a marketer, you hope that you're not just trying to shift people around, that you're actually going to make their lives better. So it's probably one of the weaker aspects, but it's one that we hope that we're going to pick out. All right, so we also know that some people have certain preferences. Some people want to be contacted by email and other people don't. But how do we detect that pattern? We should have the future in mind. We want to be proactive, and we want to think about these cross-selling campaigns as being multi-staged. So it could start out in year one that I'm going to launch this campaign in anticipation that the customer is going to end up in this state next year and be more receptive to this type of account. So maybe right now I find out that they have a checking account. And I find out that if a person has a checking account and a money market account and a credit card, that they're much more likely to open up a home equity line with me. So how do I get them to the checking account, to the home equity line? I could think about just promoting the home equity line to them directly. The problem is that that's actually more difficult to do than to get them to move from the checking to open up the money market. Once I get them to open up the checking and the money market, it's actually easier to get them to open up the credit card. And once they have three services with me, it's actually easier to get them to open up the home equity line. So again, the goal is to try to detect this multi-stage, multi-channel, and multi-segmented proactive process. So it actually becomes a very complex optimization problem. What we're trying to do is create this integrated framework and create this stochastic dynamic programming problem. So mathematically, we need to solve for a sequence of optimal cross-selling interactions and strategies. And we need to be able to describe when to introduce which product to whom using which channel. And that's the title of the paper. When do we choose the right product at the right time for the right person? Oops. So as I said, I'll just try to be brief with the notation, but we've got customers and products in time. So in this case, we might have millions of customers. We might have actually hundreds of products, but in our particular case, we're just thinking about the families of products. So there might be 50 different types of checking accounts. There's free checking, there's checking with interest, there's regular checking, and then there are a bunch of varieties of checking off of those. But in this particular case, we're just thinking about five different types of products, where we've got checking and savings, and then we have loan products and brokerage accounts. We've got time, and in our case, time is going to be on a monthly period. So we're thinking about 24 months out of data that we have, and then we're going to forecast again beyond 24 months into the future. So we know at each point in time whether a person has a particular product with us. So we can look from their past data to understand what sort of the switching patterns amongst those products. And at the same time, we're looking at their past data to detect the type of category or affluency that they fall into. So what makes this complicated is that our information is not that good about what consumers are doing outside of our bank. So a customer could have $1,000 in our account, but they might be a multimillionaire. How do we know that? Well, unfortunately, we're only observing what they're doing at our bank. And since we've focused on that, we've got to build a model that sort of detects what's the chance that they could fit in another state, driven by their demographic characteristics or their financial status or the bank activities. The customer at each point in time is going to make a decision about whether they're going to open up an account or not. And that account decision is going to be driven by things like marketing activity. So if I gave them an offer to become a credit card member, then certainly that's going to make them more likely to open up a credit card with me. I also have things like the balance that they have in their accounts. I've got how long have they stayed with me at the bank. You could think about extending this with lots of types of information about what's influencing consumers to make decisions. Then on top of that, we now have our model, and our model's going to predict what's the chance that a customer is going to have this specific type of account at this point in time. We can build up this model of the transitions that they make from one account type to the other, and we also have a model that tells us what's the chance that they move from one state to the next. The last thing to do is to say, well, what's their profitability? So we take up the profitability from all the different types of accounts that they have at each time period, and then we're going to sum this up over their life with us, and then we're also going to discount this. So this is where that dynamic aspect of the problem comes into play, where I can make a decision at this time period in the hopes that it's going to increase the probability maybe 1 or 2 years from now. So this is our profit, and we're really just summing up across a lot of different variables. So this is our optimization problem. We want to maximize our profitability subject to a constraint. And the bank actually has lots of rules that they've imposed on how they go back and make decisions about advertising. So the bank doesn't like to wear out their customers, and they have a rule that says that they're only going to send one message every 3 months. So given that we can only send one message, what message should we choose in that time period? We also have constraints about how much the bank is going to spend on marketing overall. So we're going to just treat that as a static variable. In this particular exercise, we're just looking at a small sample. We've got about 1,000 households over a one-year period. We've got monthly account information, and we also have demographic information. we've got 5 different types of categories: checking, savings, credit card, lending, and others. So others includes insurance, brokerage account, and for a select few where we've got trust services, those can be very profitable, but there are very few people that have those services. All right. So let me get into the results and just give you a sense of where we're headed with this, and then I'll just summarize the results that we've come up with. So here's 3 financial states, and in this case, the financial state 3 is going to be the best state. That's going to be the one that they seem to have the highest profitability. This particular customer starts out at a low state, and just over the course of 1 year, it appears that there's a fairly strong probability that they're moving from the low financial state to the medium or the high financial state. Now, it's not quite as clear-cut, these states, as I described earlier, where one is an affluent retired person and the other is an up-and-comer. There are other things that are being merged into these definitions of states. Whoops. But what we'd like to do is think about how solicitations change with these financial states. So in our model, we have 12 different financial states. And what we're interested in doing is taking a look at what's the probability that someone will receive a particular message, or the receptiveness that they would have to a particular message. So in financial state 1, people are going to be very receptive to checking messages. In state 12, they're going to be very receptive to investment or other messages. So again, this just confirms that intuition that I was trying to provide you early on, that there's something that we can do if we can detect what state they're in, how receptive they're going to be to different types of financial services that we offer them. Here's an example of how age can impact cross-selling. What you're looking at is age in the bottom axis here, and then probability. And the probability refers to if we give them a message, a cross-selling solicitation, how does the channel that you use impact that? So in this particular case, what you notice is that as I get older, I tend to like mail, direct mail messages. Whereas if I'm younger, I tend to like to have email messages.
And sure
email tends to be... I'm sorry?
Are you sure the one-year-old reads email?
That's extrapolated. Actually, there are some accounts that are set up for one-year-old custodial accounts, so it does happen. Banking is really actually very complicated because you could have 5 or 6 different accounts. And you might think that that's one person, but you have your wife, you could have your children, you could have your parents, that you all have joint accounts. You could have your summer home, and you could have your regular home. So there really is a lot of complexity. So I get an interest of time. I'll just summarize the results, and then I'll go ahead and take some questions from you. So what we find is that it appears that there really are a few strong financial states that people seem to be in. There seems to be this convenience state where people are just interested in bank location, ATM access. There's a borrowing state, and then there's this high-risk return state. People are migrating across these 3 states in time. And you don't want to ignore the people in the lower state just because at this point in time they're in that lower, less profitable state, because there's some probability that they're going to move up to that more profitable state. We see that they've got different sensitivity in each of these states. So if we're smart, we can think about what's the chance that they're going to move to a more profitable state and choose the right type of solicitation or message for them. People seem to have different preferences for different products at each state. So in convenience, they seem to like checking and savings and credit cards. In the stable income state, they tend to like lending and credit cards. In the high risk return state, they seem to like investment products. So cross-selling contacts have educational roles, followed by promotion and advertising roles. So again, it's not purely I send out the message and people are going to make a decision today. It raises their awareness, it kindles their interest, and it might take several months or even a couple of years to convert person over to a new type of account. So customer-centric interaction improves over campaign-centric interactions. So again, this is preliminary work. We're still in progress, so I'd be happy to hear your comments and thoughts about it. But let me go ahead and just stop here and see what kinds of questions or thoughts that you have. So thank you.
Well,